isms? Good, pal.
Boy, I'm off to a slow start, but everything's going to be great.
Well, you know, that's what happens when I have to teach you how to use your phone. I love how you like made fun of my phone settings, essentially keeping me focused on those around me after a certain time in the evening.
And your elderly setting.
Yeah, the elderly setting.
Elderly mode.
But you don't know how to copy and paste. I mean, don't even get me started. Before we even pressed record, you sit down. See, here's the thing, folks.
That's
whenever
rude,
you have an
bro.
Appointment, okay? Let's say, hey, be at the studio at 11.
No, I'm
and always
And
then you get
early.
To the studio and you're not ready. Boy, I don't know.
Untrue.
I don't really know how to deal with that.
Untrue, pal.
I'm going to go meditate. I needed some meditation time.
Hey, gang, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, a podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. I'm your host, Tyler Bentz, and this is your other host,
Woody Brown.
Hey, big cat, how we doing?
Hey, man, doing well. Mm-hmm. I know you're super excited to talk about... You know, you've been a little cryptic with me in terms of what today's podcast is going to be about, and I'm excited about that, but I got to knock out a couple things just off the top here.
A little house cleaning?
A little, okay.
But no, housekeeping.
Housekeeping. Now, you've been hanging out with me too long, man. You're messing up the phrasing of things, which I'm relatively becoming more famous for. But anyhow, okay, a couple things. I think a couple episodes ago when we were talking about the Mole Man from Hackney and the fairy shoe, I was kind of trying to think like, oh, okay, Ring of Bera. I think I've been there. I was wrong. We actually went to the Ring of Kerry, which is about an hour and 15 minutes away, depending on who's driving, from the Ring of Bera. So similar, I've seen some comparisons online. Apparently the Ring of Bera is a little bit more secluded. Interesting. And it's shorter. So it's a lot of folks will say, you know, go to that one as well or first because it's a shorter drive and equally as beautiful. So just a little kind of correction there.
And also, then, I called it the Bera Peninsula, which is a better name.
You know, it's not often that we get a chance to kind of fact check ourselves.
That's
but,
true.
You know, every now and then. You got to do it. And I wrote that down to kind of bring up today.
Well, real quick, let me say something. So this podcast, I don't know if you folks know this, because a lot of podcasts aren't done this way. But if you're a new listener or maybe you missed an episode where we got into this, every single thing that we do with the podcast, whether it's the merch, whether it's graphic design, whether it's the sound design in the episodes, whether it's the music, whether it's the mixing, the editing, all that kind of stuff. Every bit of it is done by either Woody or Tyler.
That's it.
And so it is funny that you're talking about, you know, being able to like fact check yourself because every single week, well, not every single week.
Just about every week.
Almost every week, yeah. When it comes to the old, after Woody's done his editing and he passes on to me to do the mixing, every single time I'll go through the episode and I'll be like, God, I made a mistake there. And like, it's so tempting just to just hop on that mic and like re-record yourself, but I never do.
Yeah, so, you know, hey, look, we're all human, we make mistakes. And well, if you're here, that means that you're open-minded enough to... practice a little forgiveness and some grace. I also wanted to just kind of say, when things like this happen, you know, I just get super excited. Two things. One, we had someone reach out on the Instagram, a guy named Dean, and he ended up commenting on one of our photos. I think it was the episode with the photo of, it was the Loab episode. And so he commented on the Instagram post and said, hey, you know, this was my... introductory episode, super rad, you know.
Cool.
And I just wanted to say, you know, we don't really get a chance to sort of shout out the listeners individually and stuff, but this was just a perfect example of like, you know, he could have just liked some of the photos and just been sort of in the ether, but by sort of saying, hey guys, you know, this was my first episode, super rad, you know, all that, then it really kind of brings our attention to it. And so anyways, welcome, Dean. Thanks for being a listener.
And also, for all those folks that have done that, I mean, the cutoff is now, if you're hearing this, but every person that has done that, we have actually sent out $100 bill to each one of those people. Right. So maybe in the future, you'll go the extra mile.
Yeah, maybe so. No, it just means the world to us, you know, because like we say every single week, like just making that world just even smaller and those connections a little bit more meaningful between us all is really cool. Mm-hmm. And then kind of related to that, I got a quick question for you. And this is going to kind of like, I think this is where the line is drawn between like someone who either has family that's from Texas, grew up there a little bit, or someone that absolutely isn't. Now, there's some exceptions to this rule, but let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a buttered tortilla?
Like, what do you mean just...
Yep, that tells me enough. So basically, and I thought in a way, I kind of figured that this was because we didn't spend a whole lot of my childhood actually in Texas, although that's where my parents are from. Mm-hmm. I thought this might have been just like our family thing, but one of
you
our
listeners... You have two Texas tattoos, though.
I don't have any Texas tattoos. One of our listeners and best friends, Julie, sent a... it was like this video of... Now, there's this popular store in Texas called HEB. It's just like a Kroger or a Publix or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, huge. And they had their own candles. And one of the candle scents was buttered tortilla. Dude, whoa. Like my jaw hit the floor. And I was like, oh my God, I got to have one of those immediately. Because like it was all growing up, anytime we were in Texas and stuff, you'd get these like homemade flour tortillas that tasted better than anything you've ever had. And they would, you know, right as soon as they were cooked, like nice and hot, you throw a little butter on there, best freaking snack of all time. Anyway, all that to say, it's always nice to hear from folks. And man, you should try a buttered tortilla.
Hey, speaking of Julie, man, have you seen the, I guess her husband, Jonathan, is in Egypt?
Something, man. Yeah, I saw that.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
We got to reach out and figure that out. Yeah, that's bucket list, yeah. Big time.
You know, Edgar Cayce, also known as the Sleeping Prophet, believed that the mystery or the like origins of civilization are somehow, I think I could be messing this up, but it's like either the left or the right paw of the Sphinx, which has really always fascinated me.
What do you mean, like hidden in like, the paw?
Yeah, like, well, like buried under the paw, or like maybe there's a some sort of, we are veering away from the dock a little bit, but I do believe that, so Edgar Cayce was, you know, a long time ago, so many of his like predictions, he would sort of make these, he would sort of fall into this trance, which is why they called him the Sleeping Prophet. We're definitely going to do a full episode because he's fascinating. But his thing was like, he always had to have somebody sort of recording.
Waking him up.
Well, yeah, recording every single one of his, I don't know, what would you call that? Like his like trance sort of state.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah, like okay.
And so people would like ask him questions when he was like sort of in this trance and he would answer. The interesting thing is like this dude, you know, was trying to, I think he was trying to sort of disprove him. You know, he was like a journalist, I think. And again, we're going to do a full episode, but.
Yeah. Now give me the time period. Like what are we talking here? Like 1940s, 1920s, 1800s, 1700s. What are we?
So he died at. I'm looking now. He died at age 67 in 1945.
Okay.
So yeah. 30s, 20s.
Okay.
But there was a guy that was trying to disprove him. Again, all my details are a little murky at best, but he was trying to prove that it was all sort of a hoax, that these like, you know, fugue states or trances that he would go into were just total BS. And so while he was there, or while he was in a trance, And the thing was like, I don't know, I can't remember if he would just sort of voluntarily like start saying things, you know, like giving predictions or whatever. I think that his whole big deal was like helping people. So people would would send him letters. And I do know that eventually it became like too much. Like it became where he was getting like thousands and thousands of letters, you know, for like people were asking to be like healed and like all this kind of stuff. It's, again, it's fascinating. But this guy came in and had like a pair of like pliers, I think, and was like trying to show that like he wasn't really in a trance. And I think at first he was like cutting his arm, and then he ended up breaking his finger. Like while Edgar Cayce is in the trance, he had zero like response to that. He was, he's totally out. And then, you know, obviously he would wake up like just in a full scream.
Yeah.
You know, we got to get a doctor in here kind of thing. But anyway, all that to say, he made a lot of predictions with like the location of Atlantis. And I think his thing was like,
oh, I have heard of this guy.
Yeah. We've talked about it briefly. The like Bimini Row, you know, down in like the Bahamas maybe, close to like the Bermuda Triangle, all that area. That's where he believed that it began. And it is interesting because in that area of, you know, Bimini, it's like under the water, there is this, I mean, it almost looks like a road. It's really super straight. It was clearly some sort of passage, you know, before it was submerged underwater. But all that to say, he made a lot of predictions that have 100% came true. And that was one of his things, is like the secrets are hidden under the paw of the Sphinx. And I want to say that somewhere in the 2000s, maybe even like fairly recently, I can't remember, they have discovered by using like LIDAR, or no, not LIDAR, but like ground penetrating radar, that there are actual like chambers like in the Sphinx. So he's technically, you know, right for the most part.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting because like not too long ago, and I've kind of talked about this on the show too, like I've always been fascinated with ancient Egypt, but unfortunately not motivated enough to, you know, read a ton about it or even watch a ton about it, which is interesting. It's just nowadays, it's more just like a, you know, the time to be able to do it. But I mean, I've downloaded audiobooks on it, and I downloaded a freaking, it was like a Harvard course or something about ancient Egypt lectures and stuff. And I started listening to it, and it was super intriguing, but it's like, it's one of those things where when I am taking in information like that, I want to make sure I have, like, I want to be paying attention to it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
It's just so fascinating, man. I mean, even forget about any of the sort of, you know, how did the pyramids get made and, you know, the engineering feats and all these kind of things, you know, wipe away all that sort of mystique for just a second. And just even the things about, like, I mean, just their art and stuff, man. And, like, the ability to mold and sculpture things so well. And it's just, I don't know, it's fascinating, man.
Yeah. It's, so I read way back in the day, probably when I was like really like getting into like conspiracies and like paranormal and like all this sort of fringe stuff. I would say the best book to read is Fingerprint of the Gods from Graham Hancock. Or Fingerprints of the Gods, sorry. I mean, he has a whole bunch, but I'm sure you've seen this guy on Joe Rogan. He's always the guy that has glasses. He's like a British writer. He has a great voice. It just sort of lulls you in, kind of. He's really cool because he never comes out and quite like says like, oh, I believe it's this, and this. But he's like us in the sense that he's like, well, I think the most important thing is the fact that like we can't explain it, but there is something to it. You know what I mean? It's not like, because that is the one thing with like the Egyptology field, is because of like the government over there, and because of there's such a like closed fist on all of that, you know, it's like your like point of entry is almost impossible now, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I think it's interesting. I think he brings up a lot of cool things. Like he's real big on connecting the statues and some of the like archaeological sort of finds or whatever, how they're super, super similar, you know, from like Egypt to like Mesoamerica to, and so he does, there's actually, I haven't finished it. I watched the first episode, but he actually has a new documentary that came out.
Oh, man, yes, on Netflix, right? And,
yeah, yeah.
And they talk about Indonesia in part
yes,
of it, right?
I told yes, you, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Dude, what's fascinating to me about that, and again, I know we're kind of veering off here, but the part of the reason why in so many ways, I wish I would have studied more or at least, you know, maybe minored in anthropology, because like what's interesting to me that I really want to kind of like dive into is, you know, you've got all of these similar patterns in engineering across the globe at different times, ancient enough to where like, you know, traveling between them would have been difficult and they wouldn't necessarily have, I say that, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It would have been harder, I'll say, for them to share those, you know, designs with one another, you know? Mm-hmm. Is this, it's, you know, when you look at things like society and how different communities evolve over time and stuff, like, it's hard for me to sort of draw the line between just like, oh, it's the natural progression of things for them to all of a sudden be pyramid in shape and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's hard for me to piece those things together. And so like to be able to read about that or something, I think would be fascinating. And to learn the timing and the differences between them. And I mean, like I was going to say earlier, it wasn't too long ago that I actually, and maybe this is embarrassing, I had to look up like, what's in, can you go inside the pyramid? Mm-hmm. Oh, it was when Moon Knight came out. And you know, I got even, you know, I was like, oh man, this is so cool. Cause it's a blend of superheroes, you know, and
so your Egyptian gods.
Egyptian gods and stuff. Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, I love, I thought Moon Knight was great, but the, I still think the comic did it.
There's just so much more, man.
Yeah. It really, to me, it plays more on like the, like, just sort of the weirdness of like the Egyptian gods and like them sort of, you know, being able to be like inhabited by those gods is, I don't know, it's pretty fascinating. Yeah. But yeah, if you guys are interested in like Egyptology and some of the more, I don't want to say metaphysical or even like esoteric, but like even the more maybe sort of fringy aspects of it, you know, I think Graham Hancock is definitely the guy to begin. Hey, Woody, so what do you know about the Illuminati?
Well, I'll say this. Immediately when you say that, I thought to myself, you know, folks, we have not talked about conspiracy theories for at least two seasons. And then at the beginning of the third season, I give Tyler like an inch and we start talking about Project Bluebeam, okay?
And which now, you like to call it a wrong name.
Yeah,
every
Blue Book,
time.
Build-A-Bear.
Okay.
Now, you're surprising me with another. I don't know anything about Illuminati other than I know that, and obviously this is very surface level, probably completely wrong, but here's the gist as far, this is what I do know, or this is my take on this sort of conspiracy or whatever. Mm-hmm. Illuminati is, I guess, said to be a far-reaching, I would say perhaps ancient organization that controls everything. Everything from, well, that's all I know. And I don't know what that means. I don't know, you know, much about it, but I know there's like some symbolism involved. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of folks that say it exists and here's how and why and all that stuff. But like I've said before, in when we were doing the Project Bluebeam episode, I'd never really, sometimes it's hard for me to get into a lot of conspiracy stuff. Mainly, like a lot of times whenever I go online and see something, it's like, oh man, this. And it's like, sometimes, and I'm not saying this is the case at all for this. Mm-hmm. So don't get, you know, don't get twisted over there. I'm just saying that sometimes so many of so many of the things that people consider conspiracies and stuff, oftentimes can be related to just like almost a zero base level understanding of X, Y, and Z. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so because of that, because of how quickly things can just like, you know, spread across the internet, I just, you know, I just kind of get over, like exhausted by it all. And I just don't really, you know, have a extreme interest in it. So that's why my knowledge of this stuff is relatively limited. But as you know, being listeners or brand new listeners to our show, it's not so much of finding, our mission isn't to find the truth. It'd be mm-hmm. cool if we did, but our mission really is to just talk about interesting stories. And Tyler and I have been best friends for many years. Mm-hmm. And so for the most part, I can trust that he's going to at least deliver an interesting story, whether or not I agree with it or not. Not most of the time I can, you know, buy in and it's interesting. So I'm excited about today's show because I think, I guess now I can assume that it's about the Illuminati in some way.
Well, for many of those folks that would say, oh, well, the Illuminati is a myth and that's like a silly idea. And yes, that has been painted with a brush that would maybe sort of throw shade in that direction. But in actuality, there is a thing called the Illuminati. It's actually called the Bavarian Illuminati, which was founded by a guy named Adam Weishaupt on May 1st, May Day Mystery, 1776. And like all of these other secret societies, the whole point was to, quote unquote, spread enlightenment, which is always so vague. And it's like everybody from Aleister Crowley to like all of these groups, like even down to like Skull and Bones, they talk about like, we're just here to spread enlightenment. It's like, what does that exactly mean?
Well, you have to chop off your arm and then burn it in a fire, eat it, and then you can find out.
You have to steal Geronimo's skull. Hmm. But anyway, basically at the time, this Adam Weishaupt guy, he was a professor and his ideas weren't really accepted from or by the Freemasons.
Okay.
And so he kind of went on to start his own thing, the Bavarian Illuminati.
Is this guy, he's an American?
No.
Okay. He's in
Austria.
Yeah, okay.
So what we know about, I believe that like the actual sort of term Illuminati, I'm not sure if it's an actual, what I'm saying is I'm not actually sure if it's based, you know, it has legitimate ties all the way back to 1776 and the Bavarian Illuminati. But I do believe that there is a type of, you know, some sort of like hidden hand. These like this like sort of elite class. A lot of people call them like the predator class, which sounds pretty intense. Mm. So what we know is it is tied in with this concept of like, you know, your secret societies, mm-hmm. which even that term is oftentimes sort of looked at with, like, oh, you're just like making things up. But it's like these are literal things. So you have the Bavarian Illuminati, you have the Priory of Sion, you have the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which would later go on to become Aleister Crowley's very own group called the OTO, which means the Ordo Templi Orientis. You have Skull and Bones over at Yale. You have the Independent Order of the Odd Fellows, mm-hmm. the Rosicrucians, you know, the Knights Templar, which kind of gets into like the Freemasons and all that stuff.
You and all have these, like fraternal organizations that branched off of all those as well.
Yes. But the interesting thing is a lot of these even lead into our more modern secret societies or like gatherings. And these are things that oddly enough were, you know, back in the day, back in like the late 80s and the 90s, people like Bill Cooper, you know, the guy that we talked about on the Project Bluebeam episode, Sergey Manast. These are the things that these guys were talking about way back then. And they were just called like, oh, they're just crazy, you know, conspiracy theories or whatever. But, you know, now we have these things which are just totally out in the public. One called the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, the World Economic Forum, and even, which is one of my favorites, like the Bohemian Grove or the Bohemian Club. Mm-hmm. And again, all of these, like, I mean, I don't even know if it's safe to say that these modern ones are even like secret societies. I mean, the Bohemian Club, yes, but
I mean, I guess like if we can shift the definition to not necessarily being secret in terms of its existence, but secret certainly in terms of what, you know, what they're doing. right? So like,
yes,
their rituals, their mm-hmm. you know, their practices, their mission overall, mm-hmm. besides maybe perhaps having a public mission, right? I'm sure we could Google right now Skull and Bones and there's going to be like a public sort of mission yes. statement, but like it being secret, meaning, you know, you have to gain entry into this organization mm-hmm. and then there are things that you can and cannot talk about. And I'll keep going, sorry.
Yeah. We do like sort of know publicly. So like there's a guy named Carl Schwab that you've probably seen in the media that's with the World Economic Forum. And like, I think he's an incredibly shady guy. Like him, you know, you're George Soros, you're Bill Gates, you're the Gates Foundation, the John Kerry family, the Clintons. The interesting thing is all of these people, you will see all of these people at the Bilderberg group meetings, which they have once a year, at the Trilateral Commission meetings, at the Bohemian Grove, you know, right there with like the Bushes, Obama, Biden. All these people are part of all of these, you know, super secret groups, which, you know, you have to be asked to be in these groups. And they are interesting because, you know, now I think we look at like the Bilderberg group or the World Economic Forum and it's like, oh, this is like a thing. They're just trying to like help the world and all that. But in reality, it's like, okay, well, that's what you're telling people publicly. So why is it that, you know, and a lot of people can say what you want about Alex Jones. Yes, I think he's kind of nuts about a lot of things. But at the same time, he's the only guy that was able to sneak into Bohemian Grove, like back in the, I think, 90s, and video the whole thing. And it is the most bizarre. I mean, first of all, like these people are, these are the world changers of our planet. Like these are the people who, like all of your presidents from all countries, all of your Oppenheimer, the guy that created the atomic bomb, Einstein, like all of these people that are just massive like players in the game, all the Bushes, all of, you know, Ronald Reagan, of course, the Clintons. Like, it's like, oh, well, maybe they're just getting, it's just like a fraternal order. It's just like a joke kind of thing. But it's like, okay, well, if that's the case, then why do all these groups have like such a big emphasis on like worship of like these like sort of Canaanite deities or like, you know, Babylonian deities? Like, mm-hmm. So for Bohemian Grove, it's like they, you know, they all wear robes and they burn an effigy, which is like sort of a mock sacrifice of a man. And at the time they sort of claim that they're worshiping this deity that's in the shape of an owl, which if you look back, the owl was like a symbol for like Moloch, which is like a Canaanite deity, which mm-hmm. was known for child sacrifice and offering your kids. That's why they're burning like an effigy. Like it gets like super dark. But I think the idea that like, okay, well, the Illuminati is something that is just silly and it's fake and it's just something that these crazy conspiracy theorists came up with, but it's really not. I mean, they're actually real things, real organizations who really are still tied into this weird like worship of these ancient, you know, gods or whatever. All that to say, today we are not talking about that. Okay. Today we are actually talking about the Illuminati New World Order card game. Hmm. After these messages, we'll be right back.
There's something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man.
Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
Today we're looking into a game that was created by this guy named Steve Jackson. Steve Jackson was a 1974 graduate of Rice University. He went to Baker College and then went on to Sid Richardson College, attended the UT Law School, but left to pursue a career in game design. You know, this is back in the 70s. This is like 4 or 5 years after the birth of Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. You know, you would see Steve Jackson. And I think he actually, don't quote me on this, but
Maybe rub shoulders with?
Well, I have found several accounts where he actually worked for TSR, like in the early days.
And for those listeners who are not super familiar with the early mm-hmm. history of Dungeons and Dragons created by Gary Gygax, there was a company called TSR. Mm-hmm. I forgot what it stands for.
Oh, I never can remember that.
Nope, it's not Total Shareholder Return. Tactical Studies Rules. Interesting.
Wow.
Anyhow, keep going.
Yeah, so in the 70s, he worked for a company called Metagaming Concepts.
Okay.
He would develop a game called Monsters in 76. He would go on to work on a game called Ogre, a game called God's Fire, which is really cool. And it's like, just that era to me is like so fascinating. I don't know. I just look at it with such a nostalgia, even though obviously I wasn't born. You were in high school.
No, I was not born yet.
But I wasn't born then.
What I like about that time period is, especially like with just thinking about game design in general, is mm-hmm. like this doesn't necessarily predate video games, but it certainly predates them being so mainstream. And so like
right.
all those games, I mean, just think about like our kids not having the opportunity to play video games right now. And the mm-hmm. only thing they can do, it's like, it's no wonder people just went nuts for things like Dungeons and Dragons because like,
yeah,
you know, you're diving into this fantasy world that you get to like take your character through as long as you have just like a freaking, you know, dropper of imagination.
Mm-hmm. Which your wife says she does not even have that.
Zero. Uh-uh. Yeah.
So Jackson would like, you know, he was like in it. He was in that era, which just had to be really cool. And like, you know, it's also said that he was really big on like wanting to like push. I don't know that it ever really like happened the way that he wanted to, but it's said that he was really big on that like first wave of like trying to get these games for like computer, you know, or like your, you know, PC. You know, he would go on with this Metagaming Concepts for a while. He would make a ton of games, another game called Wizard, another game called Melee that he created, which I feel like I've heard of that game, right? Or there used to be ads or something in like old comics. But anyway, in 1980, he would then break off from Metagaming Concepts to create Steve Jackson Games, which is still a thing today. And it's funny because I never realized this, but I'm sure you've seen this, but it's still like a big thing for like these like sort of strategy card games. There's one called Munchkin.
Okay.
Ninja Burger, Zombie Dice, Cthulhu Dice. And there's like, you know, just a bunch of these sort of, you know, I don't know, like card games or whatever, like role-playing card games. He had a game called Raid on Iran, which kind of blew up and became like a big thing. You know, like I said, he was like big on like, you know, integrating like technology into these games. And so he did create this thing that was, I think it was like early on where it was like a published version of this game that was called Killer that would be sort of passed on to like kids at like in college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like right up our alley, but he would create a game in 1983 called Illuminati. Back then, it was like a more of like a board game. And then he would go on later in 1994 and 95 to release Illuminati New World Order, where it was completely a card-based game. Oh, another thing that was cool about Steve Jackson is his early games were... it's said that like his games were... You would buy them and they would just be like in a Ziploc bag. Oh, of man. Like cards and a couple dice or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's that like pre-internet kind of.
Yeah, dude. It also reminds me of our buddies over at Get Haunted Industries. You know, they do those different themed RPGs.
Oh, yes.
That they sent us, you know, Fairhaven and all that. And
that's the exact vibe that I imagine.
I love that.
Yeah, dude, it really is like, I mean, now we have, you know, D&D Beyond and stuff, and, mm-hmm. and it is so nice to have stuff on the computer, but like, I don't know, there's just something
so... Dude, can I just tell you, as a dungeon master nowadays, I freaking hate it. Because it's just like another reason for players to get distracted and be on screens and like, are they messing around on their phone or are they looking at their thing? Like...
Well, I don't use my phone.
I think I'm about to get super strict in here, and everybody's going to have to bring in paper, and they're going to have to bring in, and when I say paper, I mean like your character sheet is going to be paper.
Mm-hmm.
No devices. You check those in upon entry.
I mean, I'm cool with that.
And like if you're a spellcaster, dude, you can buy
the spell cards
and you know, dude, you just be like, oh, I'm using this spell. Boom. You
know, what about all those homebrew items and weapons?
Yeah, you got those cards. So I made you cards.
Yeah.
Anyway, dude, go ahead, Phil.
Being able to roll with all of your like your bonuses and stuff already on, like,
you just know that, man. You just
I don't use my phone at all. Other people possibly could, like, wrong.
What I'm saying is this: both of us have always been kind of magnetically attracted to like the indie vibe, whether it's in games, music, whatever, just the idea that people are using their own hands, their imaginations, whatever set of skills they have to create something. And then somehow like before it gets mainstream, we're able to like get our hands on it is just like, it's the coolest thing ever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like if you would have been one of the people that bootlegged the Dave Matthews Band early on and you had cassette tape, to me, that's way cooler than, well, I just picked up Under the Table and Dreaming at Sam Goody, you know? So anyhow, I this already sounds really, really cool.
Yes, especially for folks like me and hopefully soon people like you that, you know, that become privy to these, like, elements of, you know, fringe whatever, so like the Illuminati and like these secret societies. It's really cool, and I'm extremely into the idea of us trying to track down it. So like I said, this game came out, the cards were released in 94 and 95 of that original deck, and I think now there's been, you know, since then there's been like multiple sort of like expansion packs, and you know, it sort of became like popular again, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But in that original set, and this is kind of the main reason that I bring this up, this the whole like game and everything, the whole reason that I bring this up is that this game, which again came out in 94, and according to Steve Jackson, according to Steve Jackson, who, you know, is the founder and created the game, a lot of these ideas that would go on to be on the cards, you know, were born way back in 83. So we're talking a lot of these concepts were created in either 83 or 94. And the importance of this game is the fact that there's cards in this game that are, I think, directly related to, I mean, basically like telling the future. Like it is...
What?
Yeah, dude, it is so fascinating. So I'm going to send you, right now, I'm going to send you some photos.
Now, the hard part is, I'm just thinking off the top of my head.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I can't wait to... Okay.
Okay, so the cards that you have in front of you on your phone, you should have now. One is called Terrorist Nuke, and the other is called Pentagon. What do those cards have on them?
Okay, so the Terrorist Nuke card basically has the World Trade Center, or what buildings that look like the World Trade Center.
Twin Towers.
Yeah, and an explosion kind of happening in it.
Yep.
And then the other one is the Pentagon on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that one is, now that's, you know, obviously that's super interesting, but the Terrorist Nuke one to me is kind of like the most interesting because it's like,
yeah,
if I was going to predict, like, let's rewind back into the 90s or something, or 80s even.
Mm-hmm.
If I was going to predict target areas for bad guys to go after in the States, Pentagon would be on top of the list, you know, blah, blah, blah. But mm-hmm. the freaking, I guess, you know, the World Trade Center, when was the first bombing?
What do you mean?
Like before September 11th, you know?
I don't think there was. Well, there was the Black Tom incident, which not a lot of people
know
about. That's actually a Mandela effect.
So the first World Trade Center bombing was in 93.
Wait, what? What do you mean bombing?
I mean bombing, dude. You don't remember that? Like, there was like this huge, like, the part of the reason why I remember it is because there was like this huge, like, campaign. And I don't know if this is urban legend stuff, but I remember there being this thing about like the Indiglo Timex. Mm-hmm. Basically, when people were trying to, in the stairwell, trying to find their way out after the bombing, they used the Indiglo to light their way. And so, it was a big sort of, kind of like, oh man, I need to get me an Indiglo. But yeah, dude, this is like February 26, 1993. The World Trade Center was, just a 100-foot crater, man. Several stories deep, several more high.
Speaking of Mandela effects that I've never heard of, have you ever heard of an assassination attempt on Bush? I've never heard of this.
It sounds kind of familiar.
Dude, a guy literally was in the crowd and threw a grenade that landed on the stage right next to him, and
it was like a dummy, right? Or yeah. Not a dummy, but like a dud. Yeah, I think I do remember that.
See, I had never heard of that.
And so, like, here's what's interesting. So, 93, this happens. Relatively positive shortly after all this stuff started happening, right? I'd have to look at the dates in terms of like the Olympic bombing in 92, right? And then this in 93. And then I think that's whenever we came back. And so we were kind of like hypersensitive and aware of all these things sort of happening. But yeah, dude. So, I mean, like, okay, so this happened in 93. I don't know when these cards came, like the terrorist nuke. Mm-hmm. But it's, it's one of those things like which came first, the chicken or the egg in this situation? Did a terrorist just happen to be like, oh man, cool card idea. And they're like, oh man, that is a good idea. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is such like a sort of visual phenomenon, that like, I don't know, it's kind of, I feel like it's a little difficult because I can send you these photos, but like until you really see these cards, like,
yeah.
I mean, man, there's some stuff that's real fascinating. So I'm going to send you another one, and I want you to tell me what you think about that.
Okay. Charismatic. This card's called Charismatic Leader.
Mm-hmm. Basically, it's a blonde, white-haired politician seen from the back, speaking to the masses. And there's this super famous photo of Donald Trump where it looks exactly the same as this, which is pretty fascinating. Mm. Here's another one. It would go on to be pretty fascinating. It's called the Epidemic card. Mm. And this card actually goes along with another card called Center for Disease Control, the Epidemic card, and Population Reduction. Mm. And so it's all tied into, you guessed it, like what we've just had. The Center for Disease Control card basically shows scientists in a lab creating a bioweapon to, And I know a lot of these could be looked at as like sort of leaks, but I think looking at it as a whole is like sort of the important part about it, because it just sort of shows that like,
well, again, like leaks, I don't know. I mean, like, if
no, I said leaps, like,
oh, leaps,
yeah, like, okay. Skeptically, people could be like, well, that's a leap, like that was,
I mean, showing a white dude that is a president. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Across a crowd wouldn't be too hard of a prediction, right? I mean, like,
yeah, but the idea that it's literally called Charismatic Leader, and the fact that, like, Trump did come in and sort of, get this massive, like, MAGA fan base. And so, and the fact that he has, like, yellow, white hair. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I can kind of see that one. You know what I mean?
Yep.
There's another card called Princess Di that has like camera flashes and the paparazzi behind her, which it would go on to in 1990. Oh, and like the card is like, I'm guessing, I don't know a ton about the actual like game mechanics, but it's like an assassination card, which is interesting. Mm. And she would go on to die in 97, and sort of the given story, which I do not believe this, but sort of the the public story was, oh, there were so many like paparazzi and it distracted the driver and he would slam into this tunnel and they would both die. I don't know. I do think the terrorist nuke card with the Twin Towers and the Pentagon with, you know, smoke billowing out. I think that is interesting. Just because like there's another card too, which I don't know a ton about this, but there's another card that apparently for the longest time people thought it was like Big Ben. And so, you know, a lot of, I think the skeptics were like, well, you know, clearly nothing's happened with Big Ben. So it's all a fake. It's that sort of cognitive dissonance kind of thing. But actually, people looked into it. They found that it was actually from this, like, famous clock in Japan called, like, the Wako Clock Tower. And I think that was actually, like, an earthquake or something. And, it shows this clock, like, collapsing and being, like, this huge catastrophe.
In the same card, you see a lady with a can with coins, and it just says, save the clock tower.
Mm.
You know, from Back to the Future.
Back to the Future, yeah.
Okay.
Well, one of the little cool things about this is in every single card, if you look very, very close, you can find a little triangle.
Mm.
And as we know, the triangle represents the all-seeing eye, which is on our dollar bill, mm-hmm. which was brought over to us by Freemasonry mm-hmm. and or Rosicrucians. We don't totally know for sure, but, you know, that's a big thing. Aleister Crowley would call it the eye of... He would only refer to it as the Eye of Horus. So, yeah. So it gets into that sort of secret society thing again. There is another card called Energy Crisis, which just shows a bunch of cars out of gas with an empty, like, fuel tank, which, you know, I mean, I feel like that could be anything,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, again, I'm just looking at, like, the original cards. Like, I'm not looking at.
Because I think I just kind of like looked up the game and stuff, and it looks like, and purposefully so, like they have added cards that, you know, deal with like current events and stuff like that too. Because like basically reading like these cards so that the listener can tell before they, you know, obviously we're going to post pictures of these cards
mm-hmm.
on our Instagram and stuff. So hopefully by the time you listen to it, but probably the day after the episode comes out is usually when we post that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because like each of these cards, and okay, so it has that picture of whatever event it is, we'll say the charismatic leader. Mm-hmm. And then on the card, it says like, you know, you get to choose. And again, like Tyler said, I'm not sure of the game mechanics, but you can use that card and that event to influence something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the whole point of it. And so with like these more modern events, there's cool tie-ins that you could do within the game. Now, I don't know like what the overall point of the game is, you know, like
I probably should have gotten to that earlier. So basically it's this idea that you start out as like, you're able to be like in some of these different secret societies. So there's the Adepts of Hermes, the Bavarian Illuminati, the Bermuda Triangle, the Discordian Society, the Gnomes of Zurich, the Servants of Cthulhu, which that's awesome. Shangri-La, the UFOs, the Society of Assassins, which I guess was added later on, and as well as the Church of the Subgenius, which was also brought on later. You know, like I said at the top of the show, it's like you start out as like this, you know, being a member of the like whatever particular secret society, and then you use these cards, which, you know, if you believe in an actual Illuminati or an actual sort of hidden hand where these elites are kind of pulling the strings, it's things that a lot of, you know, conspiracy theorists like fully believe is happening behind the scenes. So, like, you know, there's things called like these, like what's called like a false flag attempt or whatever, or like, or a false flag event, sorry,
mm-hmm.
where they're, you know, a lot of people say like the Las Vegas shooting was totally, you know, like a premeditated planned thing. It was just completely fake, which, you know, supposedly it was like the largest shooting in U.S. history, but it was gone from like the news cycle within a day. Apparently the dude came into a hotel and had like guns upon guns upon mm-hmm. guns, like we're talking like an insane amount. The dude was like in his like 60s or 70s. And just, I don't know, there's a lot to that story that are really odd. Same way with, like, you know, and I'm not saying I want to believe, well, I don't want to believe that these events are true, but, you know, the idea that all these things are just fake is a pretty terrifying thought, even though, you know, I'll reserve my beliefs on this. But, like, you know, you have a lot of people talk about, like, the events of, like, Sandy Hook and, like, you know, the all these sort of, like, events, like these, like, shootings and stuff. It's like, once you start looking into it, they, I mean, even if they're just, like, coincidences, they really do have these bizarre little connections to each other. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the idea is that you're in a secret society and you're using these things. You're using, like, you know, there's, like, a one called, like, you know, big media, where it's, I mean, it's basically what it is. It's like all of your mainstream news is, you know, literally owned by five different companies and mm-hmm. and six different families. And so it's the idea that, like, those would be the people that are, like, pulling the strings. So you would have the power to, like, you know, sort of manipulate, like, the media to do and say whatever you want. You would be able to pull these sort of false flag events with, like, using, like, mind control and, like, you know, these, like, shooters being, like, MK Ultra candidates, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the idea of the game, which, again, it sounds really super fun to play because it, you know, you're always kind of looking at that as, like, the, oh, well, those are, like, the bad guys. That's, like, your shadow government, your sort of whatever. And so I kind of do like the idea that you're kind of the bad guy sort of doing all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
There's a card called All Stay Dead, which a lot of people say is literally Julian Assange. It's a dude with white hair, you know, down, like, chin length. There's a card called Censorship, which, you know, later Alex Jones would come out with a photo of, like, the exact same thing. It's like, you know, their mouth's covered with tape and it says censorship on it. There's a card called Joggers that's, like, an assassination card. You know, it's like, is that, like, the Boston bombing thing? Mm. This one is really interesting. And this is for the folks out there that are, like, a little deeper along sort of the path as far as, like, all this stuff goes. But there's a card called the Frog God, which sounds silly on its face, but it is interesting because at the beginning of, like the Trump presidential race, there was this, like, character that is called, like, Pepe the Frog. I'm sure you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? And eventually it would become, you know, totally associated with Donald Trump and, you know, like, the QAnon movement. And, like, that was sort of, like, its symbol. It wasn't created for that. But the interesting thing is, like, there's this whole thing called, like, meme magic. And again, this is, like, this gets a little into the weeds, a little deep. But it's this idea that, like, people are actually, like, using, like, you know, I think of, like, Grant Morrison or Alan Moore, like, the, like, chaos magic. And the idea is, like, that these people were creating these memes to, like, sort of, like, conjure things into, like, existence. And, like, part of that was, like, Pepe the Frog. And, you know, with that, you kind of get into, it kind of comes back around to, I mean, I think we brought this topic up almost on every episode, but it gets into the topic of, like, tulpas. And on, like, a tulpa on, like, a mass scale is, you know, typically called, like, an egregore. And so it's like, you know, people believed that they were kind of using, like, a chaos magic to sort of sway certain things, to, like, sway, like, political elections and sway the minds of people so that they would vote a certain way or whatever. I don't know. I think it's interesting that it literally has, like, the Frog God, because that was one of the things that you would see this, like, character, you know, doing it. It's like just this silly frog, like, head.
Mm-hmm.
And people would put it on, like, all kinds of different things. And he would have these weird sayings and stuff, but he, you know, kind of became, like, this representation of, like a trickster god or, like, a trickster archetype kind of thing. And I don't know. I think because I've kind of gotten into some of this stuff. Like, to me, that's like, it's, I don't know. I feel like there's something that could be there on that, you know?
Yeah.
There's a card called currency speculation, which people believe is like a reference to like Bitcoin or like digital currency. Mm-hmm. There's a card called Las Vegas, which is another assassination card, which, like I said before, a lot of people believe is for like the Las Vegas shooting, which again was the deadliest shooting in U.S. history. There's a card called Teflon Coating. This is an interesting one that shows a politician on a stage, and there's like food up on his podium and against the, you know, tomato on the back wall. It's basically the idea that like a politician is totally just unharmed, like no matter what they throw at him. Mm. And the interesting thing is when Trump first took office, his nickname was Teflon Don. Because, you know, the thing is like, oh, well, they would come up with this. They would say, oh, well, here's this Russian thing. And like, it was like nothing could harm him in the eyes of his supporters or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's one called Big Media, like I said before, basically that all mainstream media is controlled, you know, the fake news kind of thing, which, I mean, I think is pretty accurate. There's one called Political Correctness, which I sent to you, mm-hmm. which is pretty interesting. Especially the fact that it is like an old card from the 90s. It's two white men being, I always say hung, but it isn't like hanged the correct word?
I always feel like that is wrong.
It sounds wrong. Yeah. But it's two men like hanged, and they both have like signs strapped to the front of them. One says, I eat flesh of dead animals. And then the other one, which to me, this one is wild. To be from 94, it says, I used insensitive pronouns, which, I mean, that's a fairly new thing. Yeah. There's a card called Supreme Court nomination, which on the card, it talks about being able to, it gives you the effect of being able to destroy any personality. You know, you think of like the Kavanaugh case. There's a card called March on Washington, which, you know, I would think of like the January 6th riots. You know, again, some of these, you could, you know, it's like that hindsight is 2020 kind of thing. But
yeah,
but it is interesting that, like, I don't know, a lot of the artwork involved is
seemingly predictive, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I have like a couple more that I do want to bring up. There is one called 1,000 Points of Light, where it has like a quote on it that says, we'll have to put something in the water. And it shows like a, you know, shady politician shaking hands with this, like, it looks like a construction worker or like a blue collar guy. They're like shaking hands, and the dude has white hair, which is, you know, the guy who I can't remember if it was like the mayor or what, but like the Flint, Michigan thing where like the water was ruined, and you know, the guy looked a lot like the dude on the card, which was interesting. There's one called Deprogrammers, which shows like either like two men in black, which that's another card, which is pretty cool. But, and I'm not like, there's so many like cool things about this game that I'm just bringing up the ones that I feel like are just seem like there could be some, you know, cause that's like the myth around it is like, there's all these things that are, it's just such a prophetic kind of game, you know?
Yeah.
But it's called the Deprogrammers. And I mean, it literally looks like a Britney Spears or a Lady Gaga who has like these two guys to the each side of her. And it's, you know, I mean, if you get into the whole Free Britney thing, and like a lot of people think that it's like an MK Ultra type mind control, and that's why she sort of went nuts, and that sort of, you know, goes into like the idea of like deprogramming. There's one called Up Against the Wall, which shows a giant, I mean, basically like our border wall. Like I said before, the Center for Disease Control, Epidemic, Population Reduction, clearly it's like a possible COVID. And I mean, it says quarantine on it. Mm-hmm. There's a Bill Clinton one and a Hillary Clinton one. And the interesting thing is there's on the Bill Clinton one, he has like a leash connected to him that kind of goes out of frame. Mm-hmm. And then this is interesting because a lot of people say that, like, you know, he was just sort of the puppet, and it actually was Hillary kind of the whole time.
Running sort of the pulling, show.
Yeah. Kind of running the show. And on her card, she's holding a leash, and then the leash goes out of frame, which is pretty cool. And then the last one, you know, this can get a little controversial, but if you've looked into any of the Pizzagate stuff, and I mean, boy, there's a lot of stuff there, whether you believe it, whether you don't, but there's a card called Pizza for the Secret Meeting, which is odd that it's just so random. I don't know. To me, that one is like, I don't know, pretty odd choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, do you want to hear my generalized thoughts on it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd say first,
we'll return after these messages.
It's a pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire. Or a vampire.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you?
If anyone out there wants,
we're fighters for truth, justice, and the American way.
Hey, this is Woody.
And this is Tyler. And you're listening to That Would Be Rad.
And now, back to our show. There's a couple of things. One, it is an interesting like way to sort of, again, prop up that conversation that we have quite often about things like tulpas and like our power to create things. You know, boy, do we have a responsibility to kind of like, let's create something nice instead. And then why does one person get, like, you know, is it more of like the more people that are talking about it? In fact, like, in other words, by us talking about it on the show, does that now give more power to this game and all of the other things that it has predicted that haven't come to pass yet? So that's one thought, which is super interesting. Another thought I have is just like, you know, it kind of, let's just say for now, just so that we're all on the same page here, for now, let's just take the majestic sort of prediction power away from it for a second. It kind of tells you, almost in a equally scary way, that these tropes are so predictive on their own that, boy, we've got, if we're going to course correct as a society, we've got a lot of work to do, because like if somebody from the 90s can essentially almost map out crazy things that we can just like, you know, whether founded or like we can draw some connections to, it's like, dude, that's also scary.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, just real quick, because like a couple things. One, like, again, I think, yes, it is a wild, weird thing that it would have been like, you know, pizza for the secret meeting. But if it would have been something like, well, yeah, I mean, like that's what people eat, you know?
And that's what you think of when you think of like delivery.
Yeah. And it's just like, hey, how can we feed a large group of people quickly and relatively on the cheap pizza? You know, the next would be, you know, I don't know, what habit I have, all my nieces and nephews over here, and there's a ton of them. We just get hot dogs and stuff, you know? So that's another thing. If it would have been something more unique, like a...
I think the title going with it is weird, like pizza for the secret meeting. It's like, that's a little weird.
I'll agree, there are some like
but it could be a
tie-ins.
Leap.
But to me too, not just a leap, it's just like, there's so many of these things that have existed for so long. And, you know, like if you are just even just a sprinkle of dorky like myself and you don't mind reading a nonfiction book, there's a book that I read my freshman year at college called The Hot Zone. And no, it's not about like, you know, strip clubs in Atlanta or whatever. The Hot Zone is a book by Richard Preston. It was written, God, man, I think... early 90s. Yeah, I think it was the early 90s. And basically it describes, and the part of the reason why my professor had us read this was because we started to talk about infectious diseases and how scary they can be and how quickly they can spread and become like a public health tragedy / disaster. And in this specific book, it talks about the one of the first known outbreaks of Ebola in Sudan in 1976 and kind of follows the outbreak and the basically the scary part of how quickly, if I remember correctly, like one person from this outbreak, before they were able to contain it, gets on a plane. Guess where they land, pal?
Where?
Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then they had to, you know, reverse trace all the infection. Anyway, so much of the, I guess, procedural stuff in terms of pandemics and viruses and stuff.
It's like uncanny.
Dude, it's insane and scary. Yeah. But I think like this isn't just something new. So it is easy for us to kind of draw like more recent conclusions. I'll give you another example, not pandemic related and not really necessarily with these cards, but I read something not too long ago, and it was about this Nazi rally that happened in freaking Madison Square Garden.
I saw that too.
Like,
yeah. Although, I wondered though if it was just like AI art.
Oh, what, the rally?
Well, like the photos. Like, that's the thing that sucks about the AI art is like it looks so good. And so realistic that
I mean, you could just reverse it. You could just reverse search it.
I mean, no. I'm saying it could be real, but like I saw like a social media post, and I was like, "What? I couldn't believe it." And then I was like, "Well, maybe it's."
I just happened to read this article about it because I get these articles about like interesting history on this day or whatever. And it was what's crazy, man. Like, if you the scary thing about history is if you remove, like, let's say you read a quote of somebody and you remove the person that said it and you read it to them. Mm-hmm. Knowing essentially that it would fall in line with what they think, right?
Yep.
And then you'd be like, okay, well, and can you guess who that was? Oh, well, you know, that was Abraham Lincoln, or maybe that was like, boop, Adolf Hitler. Or, boop, you know, some other like,
Stalin. You
know, terrible person. And so it's like, that's the scary thing about history is like, you go back and you look and there are these moments in history that you're like, man, alive, I can't believe there were, you know, 100,000 people or whatever it was that were there. And it's all boys, you know, like sort of on the shoulders of, you know, this. Anyway, I don't want to get too far into that. But here's my other point on, I guess, conspiracies in general. Also, another fascinating reason why I think being more learned in anthropology and even
this
just
is a
like
house
the study,
of learned doctors.
The learned doctors, the study of human psychology and how we kind of can easily be manipulated, but also, you know, in other words, like, because I know a lot of skeptics would hear this episode and think, well, like, good Lord, these guys are.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, whenever you lump, please don't lump me in there with how, but. So when you say these guys are crazy about conspiracy, just Tyler is crazy about conspiracies. Mm-hmm. What he's just listening as a friend. I'm just kidding. Well, but hold on. So what I was going to say is, you can like take all like the forget about MK Ultra for a second. Let's take that out of there. Let's just say for a second that there aren't sleep deprivation things that have happened to people in documented history. Let's take away that. Let's take away the fact that there. Let's just pretend that there aren't people that were experimented on with like LSD and all these other things. Let's take that out of there.
Experiment.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff that is,
Montauk,
you know, documented. Mm-hmm. Let's just pretend like that didn't exist. Well, okay, still, human nature, and part of the reason why we can say this factually really is because over time, man, human psychology is easy to tap into and manipulate in every single way that you can think of. We can even just boil it down to, let's just talk about business. Let's talk about marketing. You know, there's reasons why the last few things that you see at the register are sitting there is because over time, they've collected data on top of data on top of data that says, you know, these impulse items have a greater likelihood of being purchased right before they leave.
Oh, that's
why the freaking G.I. Joes used to be right there, man.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I'd be like, please, Archie Comics, like all that stuff was right there. Yeah. And so like as humans, it's really not like that difficult for politicians, forget about secret societies, for just like influential groups of any kind, even if it's just like, I don't know, let's just say a lobbying group of Uno cards or whatever it is, okay? Let's just pretend for a second, I'm just using one that's not a political hot button. Let's just pretend for a second that Uno wants to be in every household and they've got a ton of money and they lobby their politicians. You know, there's a lot of influence that those people that we have in these positions have and can have on us. Next thing you know, it's all over the news that Uno increases your intelligence for blah, blah, blah. Mm. And so, like, that marketing campaign, it's all money.
It's like the new food pyramid.
Well, new food pyramid, you want to know what else? Did you know, and I didn't know this, do you know how the top candidates from each party get that position?
What do you mean?
Okay, so, you know how, like, besides, what's it called? The primary election, right?
Like public elections.
Yeah. Part of the way that those candidates get into those spots to be seated in, like, a spot on a debate or more ad time and, like, all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
it's all that green dollar, son.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's, like, private interest groups, mm-hmm. lobbying.
Yeah.
Like, it's all super shady.
Mm-hmm. I always say this too, and I don't know that because we refrain from getting political on the show for multiple reasons,
mm-hmm.
but what's interesting is most of the time when we say anything on the show, it's universal, right? And so it's not just one group or the other. Like, we can say, interestingly enough, that, like, mm-hmm. I think that if, for example, lobbying was mm-hmm. illegal,
yep.
okay, if that was illegal, I wonder how many of the hardcore proponents of any legislation
mm-hmm.
would still be hardcore proponents of it if they weren't making some money
right.
from it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, like I said with, like, the food pyramid, it's like, okay, so we have a company called the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. They're the ones who come out publicly and say, This is where we're at. This is the testing that's been done. They just released the new food pyramid, and it literally says on there that a regular organic chicken egg is less healthy than Lucky Charms cereal.
Come on, man. My chickens.
I'm telling you.
You should see the yolks of my chicken's eggs.
I know that. I'm telling you. You're telling me that the private interest group or Post or Kellogg's, they're not paying off the FDA to say that?
No. If we're talking about conspiracies that are fun to look into, I want you to look into, listener and Tyler, look into, and I think this was in the 80s, there's a reason why everyone thinks that MSG is terrible for you.
Oh,
look
I've
into
read
that.
This. I have, yeah.
Look into that. It's hilarious. Same with, now I don't know if this is true or not, but I think I saw something about high fructose corn syrup. At the end of the day, sugar's bad for you.
Yeah,
but
right.
there was like a... It was almost like a campaign against the corn industry.
Well, you know,
so it's like all these things, man, are tied together. And at the end of the day, you know, this is part, again, man, it's super interesting to talk about mm-hmm. the fact that, like, whether or not this guy predicted the future or even created it, mm-hmm. or perhaps we're in a simulation. I forgot to left that part out.
Yes.
No matter what, it's intriguing. And, you know, for, what's this guy's name? Steve Jackson. For Steve mm-hmm. Jackson, like Jackson 5. Sorry, man. I'm watching a lot of Bloodsport lately.
Cancel.
For guys like Steve Jackson, the good news is, I mean, there's going to be, because of the similarities, sounds like what you're saying is there's like this renewed interest in this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there's this, I mean, for me anyway, it's like I would want to go get the original set.
Yeah, me
just
too.
Just thumb through them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the interesting thing, and I'm glad you brought all that up, you know, the idea that, like, well, was he predicting the future? Was he creating the future? You know, I spoke briefly earlier about like the meme magic and like the chaos magic. Well, one really interesting thing about Steve Jackson is he is a proud follower of a thing called Discordianism. Have you ever heard of this?
Sounds familiar, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
Well, so it was created in 1963. It's like this sort of religion, philosophy kind of thing where, you know, and it involves like the worship of or centered around this character called Eris, which is also known as Discordia, I guess Greek mythology, who is the goddess of strife and discord. Discordianism uses archetypes or ideals associated with her. It was the holy book, you know, quote unquote, was written in 1963 called the Principia Discordia. It was written by a guy named Greg Hill, who also went by the name Malaclips the Younger, which is awesome, and Carrie Wendell Thornley, who went by Omar Khayyam Ravenhurst.
I mean,
it sounds awesome.
Awesome, but also like instantly nerd.
Yeah, right. Well, and it plays perfectly into Steve Jackson because, like I said, he went on to create Steve Jackson games, and you know, it kind of blew up with like Munchkin and mm-hmm. and those card games that would come later. But the only book that he printed out of the game company was the Principia Discordia. He like reprinted the Discordianism Bible, if you will. And so the interesting thing is, you know, I'm not going to get like super into the Discordianism stuff, but there's a guy that you guys should look up called Robert Anton Wilson. And he actually got with another guy named Robert Shea, who would produce this book trilogy called Illuminatus. And that was the thing that inspired Steve Jackson. And so it is this idea that there's a lot of like chaos magic involved. You know, it's very based on that like trickster archetype of like spreading like discord. And it's like, and that's why like a lot of times you'll read, if you know, if you guys look into this Steve Jackson character, he's very like sort of mercurial. Like one minute, you know, it's said that like you would think, oh, well, he's like a straight up like, you know, right wing fundamentalist who is totally like conservative, and it's like all the Democrats are bad. But then the next minute, you know, he'll come out with a statement that's like the complete opposite. And so he was like a big like follower of this Discordianism thing. And like I said, it does involve this like sort of chaos magic thing. And I don't know. I think there is something interesting in the idea that like, you know, like the egregore or the tulpa, it's that idea that like, was Steve, you know, like you said, was Steve Jackson sort of informing the future of these events that would take place because of that? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. I mean, it gets a little heady in a way, but it's an interesting concept though, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one last thing that I was going to say about, and it's more of just like, I wonder if kind of situation here. And it's mm-hmm. like, I wonder if, because there are things, and then I'll give a personal example in just a second, but I wonder if there are things like secret societies, for example, or,
yes.
And even, no, not that they exist, but I wonder if because they exist as, or let's just say any organization that has any sort of secret, right? Whether that is some sort of ritual, something that the masses don't necessarily know everything about, whether right. that is
Bohemian Grove
or the you know, temple ceremony for Mormons, or the mm-hmm. ritual for a fraternity, and let me give you or anything that these quote unquote like the secret societies do or whatever. So mm-hmm. I'll give you a personal example. I was in a fraternity in college, okay. And yes, we have secret things, whether that's secret symbols and handshakes and hold on, and even rituals, okay? Mm-hmm. And even within my own campus at the time, there were these rumors that were circulating about like our rituals and all this kind of stuff. And the way mm-hmm. we'd find out is like other fraternities would be talking trash to like, you know, the sorority girls, you know? And so that's how we would find out. What the rumors were like some of our friends that were in sororities would say, like, you know, this is kind of the rumor that's going on. Is that true? Mm-hmm. Independent, you know, most of the time we'd just be like, I don't know, is it?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. So I think that there is a tendency and this, I guess, large open opportunity for us to kind of fill in the gaps as society, even for the things that are a mystery to us, you know. I mean, I've seen it firsthand with my fraternity, for example, and even me, like before getting into a fraternity, I had this, and you know, where I went to college, it's a little bit of a unique scenario where it isn't like it is on a lot of larger campuses, mm-hmm. the Greek system, I mean.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, there are still things that are secret, and it's becoming more and more hard
to keep it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And
which is kind of a bummer.
It is, man.
Even if it's a bad organization.
Even for like with my fraternity and stuff, like I'll look it up every now and then just out of interest because it's like, oh man, I mean, it's 2023. Certainly there's got to be somebody that's like posted something somewhere, you know, on some forum. Mm-hmm. And you'll go to it and it seems real. And then it's like, not it. It's well, not, the, well, this isn't the secret stuff. They think it is, man. And they're like, right. I found this, I found their ritual manual. And then I'll show like a picture that looks like, oh man, that really does look like the thing. And then they like go on and it's like, and this is what happens. And so it's like the same kind of thing exists for like other things. So my point is, when there is secret stuff that we don't understand, mm-hmm. it's easy to kind of fill in the blanks. And I don't know. I mean, look, man. You know, I will tell you this. We didn't have any ceremonies dedicated to any sort of pagan gods. In fact, like all the imagery except and symbolism and within Baal. My fraternity was mm-hmm. all Christian, actually. Mm-hmm. So all that to say, because we don't know, gives the opportunity
like,
to...
Because
to,
we don't know exactly what's going on. Like
all we can do...
It's easy to sort of build up this...
Yeah,
this
all like, we can do is guess. And then yeah. I'll tell you, man... From the out, like, let's just say, for example, that someone had a hidden camera mm-hmm. At some of the events or something that my fraternity does in and around sort of like our initiation week for pledges and stuff. Mm-hmm. Dude, people would be like, there would be like Bohemian Grove style, probably like, oh my God, like, there's, you know, this and that. And it's like, no, dude, you know, so from the outsider perspective of not knowing, it wouldn't be that level, but mm-hmm. from the outsider perspective, not knowing what's going on and what these things that have a meaning are, you know, it can be weird. I mean, dude, when I told my parents like that I was gonna be joining a fraternity, they're like, what? Mm-hmm. Because all they thought about was alcohol poisoning and also like weird rituals and stuff, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, I will say this. I have done a good bit of research like into like Freemasonry, right? And I think there is this may sound crazy to some people, but I do think there's a clear connection to a lot of the weird like symbolism in pop culture and media and all that with like a lot of the symbolism that is in the early sort of writings for like Freemasonry. However, I also know that like my grandpa was a Mason, my uncle was a Mason, they were both deacons at a church. They're two of the best men that I've ever known in my entire life.
Right.
And do I think that they were like doing a lot of the stuff that I...
Like, let's put it this way. If they were a part of an organization that was any kind of questionable in terms of like a moral
right.
standing, both those dudes, man, would just be like, peace out, I'm gone.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But because I know, like, I know them personally, and so, but I see what you're saying, but I also do think that there's different, like, levels of this, too. I think, you know, I think, like for the Masons, for example, it's like you have your Masons who are all across the U.S., all across, you know, I mean, it's international, but, like, mm-hmm. in the U.S., every single small town is going to have a Masonic temple. Mm-hmm. It's super shady. I mean, not shady. It's super, like, secretive is mm-hmm. what I mean. I didn't mean to say shady. I remember as a kid, you know, long before the internet, I would ask a bunch of questions. And they were like, you know, we can't tell you. Mm-hmm. We can't tell you what's going on. I remember as a kid, I was with my uncle and he had to drop something off, like, at the lodge or whatever. And I went in and it was super weird. It was super, like... It was like my young mind couldn't wrap my head around like what? Like, this looks like a church. Like, mm-hmm. like it, this isn't like a religious thing, is it? And they would say, no, it's not a Christian thing. And it's like, you're a deacon at the church. Like, mm-hmm. like what is happening? And there's an element of that still exists with me, like that I can't quite pinpoint like what it's about or whatever. But I do think that like in the upper levels, there still could be connections with, you know, your Bavarian Illuminati, your mm-hmm. Rosicrucians, because there is a lot of like sort of graying of the lines or blurring of the lines when it comes to like your high. It's why people like Walt Disney are made like immediately made 33rd degree Master Mason. You know, it's like, it's a lot of those sort of, I don't know. It's like you're people that are way up in like pop culture. Mm-hmm. You know, once you start looking, it's like, oh, that's weird. They were Mason too. Oh, that's weird. They were a 33rd degree, you know, Freemason, which supposedly is supposed to take years and years, but I don't know. There's a lot to it.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other episode.
Another thing, back to sort of human nature and just sort of speaking in generalities, which I'm not a huge fan of generalities, but I'll say that, like, I don't think it matters what the organization is. Mm-hmm. But then you can look throughout history and any organization that's given any amount of authority or power has the same opportunity to use that power for evil. You can look as far back as, you know, any and every organized religious organization from the sort of, I mean, you go through the, like the Crusades or the Spanish Inquisition or the Catholic, you know, any sort of like very, very powerful organization, even religious ones, right?
Which Salem should
be like the most, like to me, it's like the religious organizations are the ones that we should be able to put our trust in the most. But unfortunately, throughout history, you know, maybe we can't. You've got, Salem Witch Trials. You've got organizations and, or I'm sorry, like businesses. Anytime there's a large amount of money, power, and influence, you know, that's where sort of the danger comes in. Something like Skull and Bones, right? They're at Yale, which, you know, take a look at, too, the percentage of presidents and...
Well, that's all...
People,
that's part of it, though.
Yeah, well, before school, but like people, like either influential or wealthy and Ivy League, you're going to have a higher concentration of that, right? And so what better place to have, what an easier place to sort of concentrate influence than, okay, totally. Now you've got like a secret society. Now you've got these like influential people that are from families that almost have like a... pedigree of power. I mean, I kind of like that term, pedigree of power. That's the new book
dynasty.
By That Would Be Rad about conspiracies in the world. No, anyways, they have that pedigree of power. And again, even just looking at it in terms of chance, which we've kind of already talked about, that like I understand the appeal of these things, but equally I can understand that look, if there's any secret, if there's any organization that has any kind of secrets, people are going to wonder always, you know?
Yeah. I think that it's easy to put like, sort of like think the worst about, you know, things, especially when these groups, it's like, oh, well, why can't I be privy to this knowledge? Why is it only this like elite group of, you know, of men that are able to like, you know, have this stuff. But I think it's sort of these secret societies began, like, I think that was part of the inception. Like I said at the very beginning, it's like all these secret societies, they always claim like, you always hear the like term enlightenment. You always hear the term, like, especially with like Aleister Crowley and like the OTO, he would talk about like the idea of like bringing like a new age or the age of Horus. And, you know, you get into Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, and they were doing all these like rituals and stuff. But it's this idea of like bringing in this new age, this new thing of enlightenment, this new awakening. And like they would talk about the apocalypse and they're like, oh, no, it's not a bad thing. It's, you know, and if you look at the Greek meaning of the word apocalypse, it is lifting the lid off something to reveal something hidden. And so it is a little bit weird, but I don't know. Especially if I'm thinking of like Aleister Crowley, I just think it's like these, like you have a bunch of like rich dudes who come from like a massive amount of money, who have a whole lot of time on their hand. And, you know, they're just, it's like.
I mean, I laugh a little bit because literally it was like the same argument from like friends that weren't getting into fraternities and stuff. Remember, I was in college, is the same thing. It's like, no, dude, I mean, you just like paying for friends. And well, it's like, I understand the perspective.
Well, no, but I'm saying like, these are the people that would go on to become like aristocrats and like never mm-hmm. really had to work a job. And I'm talking like way back. I'm not really talking about the modern era, but like, you know, like Helena Blavatsky and like the Order of the Golden Dawn. It's like they a lot of these people would come like from money. And, you know, it's why a lot of like the early philosophers also were, or I guess not early philosophers, but like they had the time to like sit around and just, you know, ponder like, well, if I am, then am I? Like it's that mm-hmm. sort of mm-hmm. existential kind of thing. Whereas like your blue collar guys, like, man, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. That's what I will say about the Freemasons. I don't think there's a lot of them that never had a job.
Right, right. Well, you know? I do think that your upper levels, I do think that's a different story.
Yeah.
As weird as, and as much as I don't like to believe that because of the association with like my uncle and my grandpa.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. But I do think there's some weird stuff like once you get way up there. Like it gets into like Baphomet and like, I don't, there's just a lot of weird stuff. Anyway, I brought up that topic today because
he just had to inch in just one more conspiracy theory. See,
well, no, on its face, yes.
This is the wedge holding the door open, was the first episode. Now that Project thing Blizzard. Is just like, well, let me just crack it open a little bit. You know, those like old school, like rubber door wedges that we used to have in school?
Oh, yeah.
That's what's happened, folks. Mm-hmm. That thing's wide open now.
Yeah, it is wide open, but I don't think that it was controversial because it was a game that was invented in that awesome pre-internet era. Mm-hmm. So that's cool for a pop culture sort of
reference, you know, there.
And then it has been known for like a long time of having this weird like sort of like predictive, like, you know, whether you're looking at it as like a type of like predictive programming, and we talked about that on the Project Bluebeam a little bit, or if it's like actually had a hand in actually like sort of maybe ushering some of these events into, you know, into existence. Mm-hmm. I don't know. To me, that's like the interesting part of the game, you know.
Well, and like I said, like really to me, it matters less on whether or not this guy's able to predict it or if he's writing it, or although that is interesting. The interesting thing to me is just like, it's that potentially like the things that he created mm-hmm. were things that like, man, even back in the 90s could have been a possibility, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, I will say one thing. If it is creating, you know, this is a time period back in the 90s where there is a lot of cool card games. There is Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was a cool Star Wars card game that was much like Magic the Gathering. And then
there was Rage.
And then there's Vampire the Masquerade.
Yep, there was that.
And so if any of those things start happening, well, then we'll know.
So if you'd like to find us out in the social media sphere, we are typically over on Instagram. Feel free, drop on by to share a comment, or if you want to tell us something cool about a mystery or a conspiracy or, you know, your own like cryptid account or UFO abduction, shoot us a DM, or if it's more long form, shoot it over to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. We have a new, well, fairly new Patreon called The Rabbit Trail. So if you're just not getting enough of this free feed of your That Would Be Rad fix, you can hop on over there. There's multiple tiers to help suit your financial situation. We'd love to have you. It really means a lot to us. It's a huge way of, you know, sort of physically supporting just two guys with families and full-time jobs that are able to also do this, you know? So we thank you so much for the folks that are on the Rabbit Trail Patreon, and we would appreciate it if you would think about joining. Also, get out there and give us a 5-star review. Take a second. Go tell a friend, a single friend, about the show that you think would be into sort of the weirder stuff or pop culture, 80s, 90s, whatever. Anything else, Woody? I can't think of anything.
Man, I think that's about it.
Did we do it? I mean, I think we did it. Okay, we did it. Well, we love you. We appreciate you. And as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes. We'll be right back.
dead. You were already dead, for you became a ghost. You always said our future would be a parade of flowers, but now all that's left is a single rose. That's the way.
Okay.
Hey, all right.
It may take some editing.
One quick thing about the tortillas. Anyway, I messaged Julie back and I said, man, I thought it was essentially just my brother and I, but every time my brother and I get together, not every time, but most of the time, we talk about how, like, we will put just about anything in a mm-hmm. tortilla and it's instantly better.
I definitely agree with that.
Hot dog. Mm-hmm. Remember those that we used to do on tour, the peanut butter and honey?
Oh, yeah, baby.
You know, tortillas. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of surprising. I'm sure I showed you the hot buttered tortilla, although, like, you know, where are we going to put the butter? So maybe not.
Hmm.
Anyway, I'm just going to turn this off, and then I got to start it over.
Hey, tell that story about your son.
I think I already have, but basically when he got this new smartwatch, we'll call it, because we're not sponsored by anyone.
Yeah.
He got this smartwatch that just happens to link up with everything in my household, because I'll just give you a hint, we're not an Amazon family.
It rhymes with Snapple.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got him a new watch for his birthday so that we could communicate with him, and ultimately he can kind of start communication with his friends and even a girlfriend. But anyhow, one day I'm just like walking through the house and I see him, and he's just like, I mean, extreme focus is coming out of this kid. And he's just like looking down at his watch, and I'm like, oh man, did he get like a breakup text? You know, all these different ideas are kind of running through my head. I'm just like, you know, concerned. And so I'm like, hey son, what's up? Well, you all right? And he just like holds a finger up, like, hold on, dad. And he just doesn't say anything and is looking down at his watch. Then, like, maybe 5 to 10 seconds later, he's like, okay. He's like, sorry, Dad, I was practicing my mindfulness. And I'm like, man, you're 10, right? I mean, it's just strange. It's very,
yeah. That really is amazing, man.
It is kind of cool, too, because he and his friends kind of compete with, like, okay, who can close their rings today on the fitness app or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.